Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the Desai Group. The Desai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at desai.com, D-E-S-A-I.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Stone Payton, and with me in the studio today is Lee Cantor. How you doing, Lee?
I am doing awesome. Did you have a good weekend, the first super nice weekend of the year?
Yeah, is it officially spring yet?
In my mind.
Yeah, I did. I had a great weekend. We had the church talent show this weekend.
Oh, and what did you do? What was your performance?
Well, having no talent, I spent about $75 and I set up and broke down tables.
Nice.
What did you do?
Went to the park. Family fun.
Good for you. Well, hey, we've got a great show this morning. In just a little while, we're going to hear from the executive director of Vision Atlanta. His name is David Pridemore, and they are just doing some tremendous work and really excited about bringing that news to you. But first up, we have the director of client services for a public relations firm called Spry PR. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Alex Truteau. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Spry PR.
Well, the simple answer is that we're a public relations firm, but I think we're a little bit different from a lot of other public relations firms in the sense that we have a particular focus on new media, social media, any digital media, all e-communications. And so that's we're basically a new alternative, I think, for a lot of businesses out there, and it's a growing business, and we're having fun with it.
So the days of the press release to the newspapers are over?
Thank God. What newspapers?
the six that are left?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's sort of a fun guessing game. We just sort of do the over-under as to how many print editions are going to have their final week this week. So I haven't set the number for this week just yet. But yeah, it's every week you hear about a new paper that's either going completely digital or that's going away altogether. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense anymore, we don't think, to invest a whole ton of time and energy in focusing exclusively on traditional media, traditional PR. So that's where we are.
Well, I mean, all kidding aside, and I've asked this on the show before, is print dead or is there still a place for it?
I think there is still a place for it. It's just in more niche audiences, more targeted publications. Like in Atlanta, the Atlanta Business Chronicle does really, really well. I mean, it completely took away the business readership from the AJC. And you've got other periodicals now that are focusing more on narrower audiences. And so it's giving people more options and less scattershot type publishing.
How does it impact the person who doesn't have an internet connection? I mean, it's still not 100% internet penetration.
No, but it's like 80% for high speed. I mean, but it's amazing.
Is it 80%?
It's something. It's pretty. Yeah, it's about 80% for high speed, and that's loosely defined. But really, your loss of coverage is mostly out in rural areas, and just truthfully, there's not a whole lot of PR to be done out in rural areas for most companies.
Uh-huh. And this goes well beyond pretty pictures on a website. I mean, you mentioned a moment ago, social media, that's a term that's all the rage. Even yours truly is on Twitter.
I know.
So
I know.
What are you learning out there about social media, and what advice, if any, do you have for our listeners?
Not learning a lot from your tweets, Stone. I don't know.
Nice.
No, I'm just teasing. Well, I think it's a different way of thinking about media. It's a completely different way. We're used to what I would refer to as one-way media, where you sit down in front of your TV, you watch, you sit down at the paper, and you read. There's no opportunity for you to interact back with that media. Now, on Twitter, for example, we're just going to go straight to the newest stuff here. On Twitter, you read something that someone posts, and you have the opportunity to click on a link that they've provided right there for more substance. You have the opportunity to reply back to that person in a very public way and ask questions. Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity to reply back privately to that individual. So you're not just consuming, you're interacting. And that's the difference. It's pretty pictures on a website that you can click on that will allow you to take some action. Whereas before, I mean, you can click on a print ad in a paper all day long. It's not going to do anything for you. So that's the difference. It's two-way interactions. And so we don't need, well, I won't make quite that assumption, but you no longer are as reliant on journalists to broadcast your message anymore because you can go straight to the source. I'll give you a good example. I don't know if any of you guys are sports fans in here, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Well, if you follow the NBA, it's all the new rages. I'm just going to keep talking about Twitter here. It's all the new rages to be tweeting, and then there's controversy. Oh, should we be tweeting during halftime? And but basically, you've got these NBA stars who've realized not only do they not need a publicist, but they don't even need to talk to traditional reporters if they don't want to, because they can broadcast their message instantly. And I mean instantly to hundreds of thousands of listeners. Shaquille O'Neal, star center in the NBA. Hundreds of thousands of people who subscribe to his tweets.
Shaq
on Twitter.
Has a
yeah, the real Shaq, the_real_Shaq. And he's really entertaining. He opens up. It's very personal. You get all the latest insights on what he thinks about. I mean, it's total image and brand management. And that applies not just to NBA stars, but that applies to corporate CEOs. That applies to middle managers. That applies to sales reps. Another great example, the Home Depot. So they have this total image crisis. Really a few years ago in the Bob Nardelli era of the perception that they're no longer there to serve their customers. And people think you walk into a store, no one knows what they're doing anymore. You can't get help if you pay for it. That was the perception. Well, sure enough, you know, Home Depot's realizing that with free social media, through Twitter, through Facebook, et cetera, that they can have a presence online where they're able to actually interact with their customers, answer questions right then and there, and they do it in a very public forum so that everyone else who sees them is seeing them helping customers. And it's a direct way to counteract that negative image, and it costs them next to nothing, at least in hard resources. I mean, there's the professional time for sure, but it's just an amazing opportunity to have that two-way conversation with your customers.
And it's fast.
Yeah, it's instant.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Alex, about how do you, when you're working with your client and they're used to spending money or getting PR where they're in the, you know, in the AJC, and that reaches, you know, theoretically hundreds of thousands of people, and you go, well, instead of the AJC, you're going to be on Stone's Twitter page,
yeah.
You know, and that's 11 people, you know, or, you know.
If you round up.
Right. So it's like, how do you, you know, that's a major shift in their perception,
mm-hmm.
You know, because it's the same effort in their mind. You know, they're paying the PR guy to do this. And now you're saying, well, it's better to be on 100 blogs than it is to be in one newspaper.
Well, here's where the economy helps. And you now, if you're in corporate America, you have to defend every single dollar. More so than you did even a couple of years ago. We thought it was bad a couple of years ago having to defend your budget. Well, I mean, try it now. And your market NPR budget has just been slashed, if it's even around. And so I think what we have, the best thing we've got going for us now, for those of us who've been believing in this for a while, is that now you no longer, a lot of folks have the excuse they need to try something new. And
yeah.
They really do. They have the excuse that they need. I don't know why anyone would want to get rid of all marketing and PR efforts at once. So pare back your budget. Think about some new and creative ways to go out there. And the difference is, you know, you go in the AJC and they still have a great circulation at Metro Atlanta. You can pay whatever amount for an ad, or you can, you know, pay to work that reporter over and over again to get your story out there. And you reach, oh, let's say tens of thousands of actual readers. Well, that's like, you know, that's great, but that's not a very targeted approach. You know, I think I'm not much for gun metaphors, but that's bringing a shotgun, and shotguns are useful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now with digital communications, we have the opportunity to go out there and do our PR with a sniper rifle. And you can be much more effective reaching fewer people. Maybe it's 11 of Stone's, if you're in professional services, for example, and let's say you're a law firm, and you want to go out there and you need to improve your image. You need to create an image in the community. You don't need necessarily tens of thousands of people to know who you are. You only need a couple of folks to really believe in what you do, and they may be one or two idiots. I mean, people from Stone's blog. So you don't need you don't need to go hunting with a shotgun if for every single company in America.
Now, Stone, how does this tie in with your innovation? Like, is this the same kind of track that innovation's on when a company's trying to break into something new?
Well, yeah, I think very much so. You know, so often in an organization that we're working with, it's one thing to acquire tools and resources and education training so that they can be better at innovating. But then so often the gap is, okay, great, what do we do with all this new capacity? Mm-hmm. Where do we point it? And, of course, in our practice, we often counsel them to put it toward the pre-purchase and the post-purchase experience. But I can tell you just personally, out on Twitter, and everything I know about Twitter I've learned since Christmas break. So that's when I started doing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just last week, you were talking about this this two-way communication. We started doing something called InnoChat, because as some of our listeners will know, you can go on to Twitter and you can mark a term with a hashtag. Mm-hmm. And when you do, if you look up that hashtag, everything that has to do with that topic just shows up in that string of communication. And so now on Thursday evenings, we have this InnoChat, and people from all over the country, all over the world, will tap in during that hour, and we've got some structure to it. We'll ask some questions, and now we have this community, and it's getting bigger and bigger every week, and they're all contributing to the conversation. I mean, what a powerful resource for innovation, and it's a multiplier effect about in terms of ways that those ideas can be leveraged, resourced, and applied. I absolutely love it, mm-hmm. and I get to do it all in my pajamas. Mm-hmm.
You can't beat that.
Yeah, God help us all when Twitter has a video feature to it.
But it does. Mm-hmm. It does beg this one question that I want to ask you, because with all this power, with power comes responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
And so I guess my next question is, okay, great. How and why do we need Spry PR if we can just hop on there and do Twitter and we can go create our own free Google blog? Where do you step in and where do you add the value?
Well, I typically don't go looking for customers on Twitter, because my clients are the folks who aren't quite there yet.
Right.
I think the reason you need, or you would prefer to have some professional help, and some folks do this with in-house PR or marketing help, you have to be aware and diligent about your image 24 hours a day. It's not like that one or two times a year that you do a big ad buy in, whatever publication, and you think about your brand and how you're going to represent yourself to prospective clients. Then it's not like that. It is every single hour of the day. With great opportunity comes great risk.
Yeah.
Is the way to put it. You can one little mistake can cost you tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, it really can, and I don't mean to scare folks away from it, but that's the reason why you don't just go messing around. You know, there's a lot of considerations. How personal do you make it? Versus, on the other hand, if you don't make it personal at all, you can be very stale and professional and uninteresting. It's difficult to bridge these issues, and it's not something that you experiment with without having someone there to say, here are the implications of what you're doing, and let's talk about doing it. Plus, it takes energy, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I'll brag on Stone. So you started in Christmas. You've got over 1,000 followers now on Twitter.
Right.
I mean, how about that? I don't even know that I've got 1,000 friends in real life, but but I've met at least 1,000 people. I mean, that is since Christmas. That is amazing. I mean, that really is amazing. So, but it takes some work. You have to stay on it every day. You know, if you don't post, if you don't generate topics of interest, and that really all comes from knowing your audience. And that's the other area where professionals help you, is you've really got to know your audience. And one of the most difficult things to do, I think, in any company is to understand your target market as well as someone from the outside can help you understand it. And you start with that, and then you develop your image, and then you talk about how you transmit it. So there's a lot involved.
Now, we're talking a lot about Twitter, but there's obviously other social media outlets out there. Is your philosophy to really kind of be on all of them, or is it better to be on one of them and get really a community going there and then move on to the next one kind of one at a time?
That's a good question. For social media, I recommend people start with one, get good at it, get comfortable with it, and maybe go to two. So, I mean, the two biggies are Facebook and Twitter, but they're very different, despite some recent changes on Facebook's side. There are other ways to go, but if you dilute yourself, if you dilute your message, you dilute your presence, then you're going to lose audience members.
So, like, most people have a website, mm-hmm. so they should have a website. Should they have a blog, too? Like a website, blog, Twitter, Facebook? Like, you know, all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you have a new job.
Right.
You know, it's just documenting your what you're doing.
Oh, blogging is becoming a full-time job. Seriously.
Right.
I mean, the folks who are good at it, it's becoming a full-time job, and they're making all their revenue off of Google ads. I think for social media, you keep it pretty limited. You can spend a half an hour a day. Literally, you can just spend a half an hour a day on your social media. But, you know, you want to start buying, you want to start investing in ads out there. You want to start pitching stories to bloggers. Now, that's tough. that is real tough to pitch a story to a blogger. So you definitely need some professional help there. You want ads out that are directly clickable, and that you don't want people to go just straight to your homepage. I mean, who cares? So what? They're at your homepage. You need to give them the opportunity to act right then and there. So there's more web development that you probably need to do, again, to give people the space to do something. And have it be what you want them to do. It can't be just about see and go away. It's got to be the opportunity to actually do something.
So you walk into an office, and often the people that you're initially talking to, they don't even have the same frame of reference that maybe Lee or I do, because we've got a little bit of a frame of reference for the blogging and the Facebook
Absolutely.
And the Twitter. So do you find that initially they're resistant to some of this, or are they embracing it, or is it just depends?
Or do they think it's a passing fad?
Yeah.
I think last year or 2 years ago, they thought it was a passing fad. And now they're frustrated because they don't know anything about it, and they feel like it's an inevitable reality.
Right.
And so now I get a lot of questions that usually go something like this, you know, can you come on in and help me out? And we need to figure out what to do about all this social media stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
jump right in.
But it's not just about that.
Right.
It's really the essentials hold true. Know your audience, craft your image, and then evaluate what resources you have out there to transmit that image. And get people to act on it. So really just some of the tools have changed, but the essentials have stayed the same. So people focus too much on the tools, I think, sometimes, and instead of on what really matters.
I remember I was at a conference a couple years ago when the word Web 2.0 was kind of coined.
Right.
And then somebody said that if you're not in Web 2.0, then you're not going to be ready for Web 3.0.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that you have to be kind of in it so that you're ready for the evolution, because it's constantly evolving. I mean, you know, a few years ago, there were blogs, and then there was Twitter and Facebook. These things just pop up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you're not aware of them, you miss out on an opportunity down the road because the next thing's coming.
Yeah, they pop up and they go away. Most of these are funded only by venture capital right now, and they're still looking for ways to, to monetize
How is
their
Twitter
work.
Being monetized?
Yeah, really?
Not.
I don't know that they are.
You know, when
in
can
Japan
they make
it is.
A dollar?
In Japan it is. But in
is
the
it really?
Yeah, somewhat in Japan. But they sell a limited amount of ad space. And
mm-hmm.
You're seeing some hints that they might do that on Twitter. If you look underneath where your followers, following, et cetera, right now they're advertising widget search and all of that. So
right.
that may be, they're just sort of
That's
getting their feelers
headed.
Out to see if there's new ad space to be had. Out there.
But another concern, though, and I know you guys have seen this, these social media experts are just popping up everywhere.
Oh, Lord.
You know, you go to some kind of meeting, cocktail party. What do? Oh, I'm a
social media expert. Yes.
Insufferable, aren't
I'm
they?
I'm a longtime veteran in social media since December.
<You're> exactly. I'm one.
Yeah.
But, you know, seriously, though, maybe you could help our listeners a little bit. Okay, we hear you. We think we want to at least explore this. What are we looking for in some quality professional help on this front? What should we be looking for?
I think you need to look at where the expertise and interest is of the professional that you're working with. There are plenty of great folks out there who have established reputations in PR. But truthfully, the name of the game has been very, very, very different up until just a year or so ago. And you really need to look at folks, where folks' training came from and what they prefer to specialize in today. Because if you're doing social media, new media, e-communications as an afterthought, then you're probably just wasting time and money. So I think that's what you look for in a professional. But at the same time, I'm completely with you, Stone. I can't remember, Lee, you might have said it about all the new social media experts who are cropping up there. You've got a lot of Lone Rangers out there now who... You know, if they look sort of schmaltzy on their website, on their Twitter page, then, you know, that's probably what you're getting. I hope I don't look schmaltzy. Y'all are going to need to tell me afterwards, okay?
It's like you wouldn't go to, like, a, you know, super overweight dietitian, right?
Exactly.
You know, you got to check out what they're doing.
That's, right. That's a good point.
How they look online.
Well, I remember having that same conversation when SEO, it became such a big big deal around our firm. And then, you know, someone says, well, I'm, you know, I am the shiznit when it comes to SEO. And then you look up, you know, their category and they're like 22 pages back.
It's like forget it.
Maybe they don't have it all figured out.
If they can't move themselves up, how are they going to move you up?
But so how does a PR firm go about doing their own PR? I mean, is it the cobbler's kid has no shoes? Or, I mean, you've got to be really diligent about that.
It can be. Oh, man, it is the toughest way. The toughest thing to do is to find time to market yourself and to do your own PR. But, well, I guess that's what separates out the bad from the good, isn't it? I mean, you just got to do it. You got to set aside the time. You got to care about it like you tell your clients to care about it.
And it's working. You made the big time. Here you are on the High Velocity Radio Show.
I know. Yeah, I hope both of you listeners really enjoy this. Yeah.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on this morning, Alex. So, and when our listeners would like to learn more, get in touch with you, and really get their arms around this business of leveraging social media, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
You can find me just about anywhere. You can go to my website.
That's a good sign, right?
Go to our website at SpryPR. That's SpryPR.com. You can find me on Twitter at SpryPR_Alex. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me just about anywhere.
Or just howl at the moon and Alex will come help you out.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, before we let you go, and I did give you a little bit of forewarning for this, but we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest if they would to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really, more importantly, what they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Happily. Well, I only consider it a mistake if you don't learn from it. So having said that, I've made mistakes. It took me maybe a little bit too long to learn from it. I fashion myself a big ideas kind of guy. And early on in my career, I just threw around big ideas with the folks that I was working with because that's what I'm good at. That's what I enjoy doing. And I think that if you start to wrestle the big ideas, you eventually get to a great idea. But then I realized that that just scares people to death to talk about big ideas. And I scared a lot of folks before I realized that you have to be careful with how you work with big ideas. And you have to accept that not everyone's going to be as comfortable with that. So my big mistake was keep, you know, banging my head against that brick wall over and over and over again until I finally realized I was scaring them to death.
And so you really do have to pay attention to how you introduce the idea and give them a little bit of a chance to acclimate to it before you hit them with all the guns.
And sometimes you got to let them be the ones who feel like they've discovered it. You lead the horse to water. And that's another thing I'll do.
Oh, sound wisdom. Alex Truto with Spry PR. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us for a little bit while we interview our next guest?
Happily. I want to hear what he's going to say.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the Executive Director for Vision Atlanta. His name is Dave Pridemore, and we'd like to welcome you to the show. Glad to have you, Dave.
Well, it's great to be here, Stone.
So tell us a little bit about Vision Atlanta, and I can't wait to hear more about Camp Grace.
Yeah. Well, Vision Atlanta really came to me when I went to a friend of mine who passed at Manhattan Bible Church. When the towers came down, he asked me to come up and do some chaplaincy work with him. And so we were at Ground Zero, and then he was telling me about, he was also the chaplain for the Knicks. And so he had a couple players, Allen Houston and Charlie Ward, that he said, man, you got to come up to upstate New York. We bought a couple hundred acres, and we built a hoop heaven, of all things.
Oh, right? I like it.
So, and this kid, this pastor friend of mine was a inner city kid in New York. He described himself as a little drug addict kid growing up in Greenwich Village. So he had a heart for the kids who lived in poverty. And so I went up the next year and saw it in action. And so I came back to Atlanta and did a little research, and the government looks at major cities in 7 at-risk categories, and Georgia, and specifically Atlanta, was in the top 5 of all 7.
So that's pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, it really is. They have the 5th largest youth poverty rate. You know where we are in education.
Right.
Teen pregnancies were at the top of the list. And so the need was great. I mean, I wasn't going to do any of this, but I mean, it really impressed me how he was reaching these kids, and especially the 7 to 12 year olds. And but these kids are in the city; they never get out in God's beautiful creation. And when I saw them up there and the enjoyment that they had, but more than that, what they were learning about character, responsibility, integrity, and doing something with their lives, it was just all over me, you know. And I came back to Atlanta. And I just knew we had to try to do something.
You really have done something. I mean, you've got land, you've got the camp. Grace, tell us more about how all that works.
Well, you know, I worked for the Bell Telephone Company for 17 years, and then I decided to go to, I jokingly say cemetery, but it's actually seminary. And so I was served in the church for about 10 years, but so I just left. Kind of the way I do things is I feel when God puts something on your heart and you have a passion, and I think passion drives everything. And so I just stepped out, and so I just stepped out and said, well, let's start the first one. And I applied, got my 501c3, so we're a nonprofit organization. And so over the last 5 years, I have rented a facility. And we work with, we don't take kids off the street, but we work with existing inner city organizations.
Hmm.
And we give them something they could never get themselves, which is we go to churches. And we use churches actually sponsor individual children. We have a picture of every child. It's kind of like this World Vision, but it's Atlanta Vision or Vision Atlanta, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it cost us $360 to send a child to an entire week of overnight camp. And we've been doing this now for 5 years, and we've taken 1,600 children to a week of overnight camp.
Wow.
It's hard finding a camp to lease, and so we knew we were going to have our own place. And so we were able to raise enough money to buy 185 acres just south of Atlanta. It has, it's gorgeous. It has three lakes on it, 100 acres of pasture. This year, our kids are going to ride a horse, milk a cow, feed a calf.
All right.
They're going to do all kinds of things. But it's, but more than that, they spend an entire week with... most of our counselors are kids that have come from the projects. Now they're in college.
Mm.
And so they spend a whole week with somebody who's been where they were. And now they're heading in the right direction. And so that really influences them. And then this year we've hired a couple that will be coming on board for our mentoring program. It's important that we connect these kids to a monthly, like what I'm trying to do is if, I was telling you earlier, there are 6,000 churches within a 45-mile radius of Atlanta.
Yeah, that was a stat that just absolutely blew
6,000?
Yeah. Yeah, really.
And I believe that probably 85% of those folks don't do any ministry to the poor. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to connect the faith-based community to the poor, okay,
mm-hmm.
and in a mentoring relationship. So we hope to have 40 kids mentored by the end of this year. And we'd like to have 140 by the end of 2010.
What does mentoring involve?
Well, mentoring involves just connecting with one of our kids. And we realize that unlike most mentoring programs where you have to spend time with them physically every week, the suburban community is just too busy to do that. So we require at least one physical contact a week. But the other times you can call them. I mean, you have to realize how major it is if you know that one of your kids has a math test and you call and say, hey, man, how's your study coming on that math test? Or you call them and say, hey, how'd the math test go? No one ever does that. 9 out of 10 of my kids don't have a dad at home. 55% statistically will not graduate from high school. And so if we can just care for them a little better, and so we go from what I call low-risk, low-impact activity to high-risk, high-impact activity with them. The highest risk, highest impact is you have to, the mentoring requires a 12-month commitment at a time. And so we do all the training, we do all the background checks, we take all the responsibility, but we're trying to just connect suburban and urban. That's basically what we do.
And how has that worked? Have you started that?
We have 6 children mentored right now, okay? And the mentoring person is coming on the 1st of June. This guy has been with us at our camp. He's a chemistry teacher. And he loves it so much that he said, "Dave, I gotta quit the school, quit teaching. I've got to pour my life into these kids." And so he and his wife, they've just had a baby. They go downtown. When he gets off school, he goes downtown every day after school, and he spends every weekend in the city. So he and you know, our passion. Everybody in your listening audience has a passion.
Mm-hmm.
Your passion drives what you do. If you can connect to that passion, and you don't. It's not a job anymore, you know. I mean, I love getting up in the morning. I don't know all of what's going to happen today, but we've had over $650,000 worth of work done on our land. That's roads put in, that's site work done, that's plumbing, that's concrete, and we haven't paid anything yet. It's all been gifted.
Unbelievable. And that's great.
It's all been gifted. People want to help our kids. And so they're doing it in a lot of different ways. So, we're excited about to see what's going to happen. We'll have probably 50 to 60 kids a week for 8 weeks. And last year, the place that we were renting had us down to 3 weeks. And so we were scrambling trying to find something. And but God's faithful to us, and he's lifted up a beautiful 185 acres.
So when are the dates of the camp?
The dates will start the second week of June, and we will actually go through the first week of August. So we're going to get 8 full weeks in. And because we won't have the entire camp built, we can do 50 kids a week for those 8 weeks. So we'll do 400 kids. But the bigger vision on this land is 300 acres, and we want to have 3 camps. It'll be Frontier Town for the little kids, 7 to 11. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do a Hoop Town, okay?
Yeah,
Hoop Town,
all right.
Man. I saw it in New York. We got to have one here in Atlanta. And I've got some pro players, and Andrew Lang is a good friend of mine. He's a chaplain of the Hawks. He's been out to the land. He's helping us out. And then we want to do Extreme Town, and that's for some of the older kids. But we believe we can be the at-risk camp for Georgia. We want 3,000 kids a summer coming within the next 8 years, because we see it's changing lives. It's putting kids on the right track.
Now, what happens at the camp for the other, 10 months of the year?
Well, one interesting thing is some of the school systems have a different schedule, and they're just not off in the summer. They 6 weeks, and then they're
– right.
So we have an opportunity there to bring those kids out different times during the year. We have Martin Luther King weekends. We bring them out. And the neat thing, too, is we're trying to get parents connected and some dads connected to the kids. So we can actually use the camp and do a father-kid weekend.
Oh, what a great idea. Yeah.
So we're gonna do some of that. We did even on the land this fall, we did a big fall festival. We brought about 80 kids out, and they had pumpkins. We planted a pumpkin patch. And they did hay rides, and we just had a wonderful time, which showed us, you know, we can do a lot more. Now, we also, it'll be a retreat facility. A lot of ministries really have a tough time with funds simply because they rely on donations all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have corporate sponsors. For example, our fort, it's a big Wild Wild West fort, okay? And it looks like an outpost. It's got the four towers, and you know, it's surrounded by cabins.
Mm-hmm.
And I started sharing this with the Keller Williams Company. They have 36 market centers around Atlanta. Well, they have a program that is called Keller Williams Cares for Kids. And so they each have sponsored a cabin. So a cabin was $25,000 to build, and 20 of the market centers have already given that money to us. And so they want to use our facility for their marketing retreats. So it'll be a retreat center as well.
A lot of ways that you can leverage this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I understand you have a zip line, or maybe even more than one zip line?
Oh, yeah. We have 3. Yeah. And one of them is like 800 feet. And these kids have never – I know they've never been on a zip line. And if the audience doesn't know what a zip line is, you get on a platform – and there's a wire. It's the same kind of wire that they catch the planes on the aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
And you put it on one pole, and you 800, 900 feet away, you hook it to another pole, and you carabine, and you just jump, and you go all the way down. So we have one over water, and we have a couple others on the property.
Well, I will pay $360
just
right now today to watch Lee.
Yeah.
Go down.
You know, that's being installed May 11th, and we do need it tested.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm in. Now, can you share a little bit about what's the child's experience at this camp?
Yeah. We have the greatest counselors to begin with. And so we have, it's all programmed. We do a lot of team building. For example, you know, the kids will be on a telephone pole about a foot off the ground. We'll put 12 kids on there, and we'll say, okay, we want you to arrange yourself by your birthdays. Okay, we do a lot of team building. A lot of our kids don't get around groups where they have to work together to accomplish a goal and a task,
mm-hmm.
okay? And each day, you know, it'll be maybe this is responsibility day, integrity day, and so we talk about different characteristics, and we bring that into the programming. And so and then they have electives they can sign up for. I mean, we have stomp and beat and dance and hip-hop, and all of our kind of singing is pretty culturally relevant. relevant to where the kids are.
Do you have any behavioral issues?
You know, in 6 years or 5 years of camp, we've only sent two kids home. But it's called Camp Grace because God's extended us grace. And so our counselors, for example, we will punish if the behavior is like you might have to run two laps around the field. But we never give a punishment that the counselor doesn't do with them. So if you have to do 20 push-ups, your counselor has to do it with you. If you have to run twice around the field, your counselor has to do it with
you.
What
an interesting concept.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, we don't have a lot of problems because they're in a different environment. They're not in the city. They're out. They won't have any problems at night. Kids don't go out of the cabin because, you know, they're out in the woods.
They're already out.
They don't know if there's going to be a lion or bears going to come and eat them, you know? So we don't have any problems with them going outside. Yeah.
But there's this continued link beyond this camp experience by virtue of the mentoring and these other things that you have in place, yes?
Right, yeah. I mean, we do a star, we call it Stars of Grace. It's a Christmas in the City party. And we do hundreds of kids and families. But the difference with ours is that if you purchase a gift for a child, you have to get on a bus and you have to go to the city. And like one of our big supporters is the Varsity. And the Varsity will bring up their catering truck, and we'll have hot dogs and the whole deal, and we'll just have a great party. But what happens is it's the relationship that's more important to me than the gift.
Right.
And then when we can connect the urban and suburban relationally, everything we do is relationships. So we try to think of everything we can do to get the people in the suburbs, and most of them have not been in some of the city areas that we take them to. And so it's just a lot of fun. Last year we had 800 people in one location, and we did two of them last year. We hope to increase that every year and do many Christmas in the City parties. So,
and if Lee can't write a $25,000 check this morning for one of these cabins, there's other ways to contribute and support, right?
Yeah, you can go online and support a child. You can support a child at $30 a month, and that will get that child to camp each summer, okay? You can just make a small donation. The biggest thing is... you know, we want to get kids to camp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the kids have to pay $30. Now, if they come up with $20, that's fine. But there has to be some skin in the game. You know?
I like it.
And
yeah.
The kids have to know that this is a valuable thing they want to come to, so it's going to cost them, okay? There's no more entitlement mentality. You know, you have to put some skin in the game if you want. And it's neat going into some of our inner city organizations and seeing their name on a little bank. And that bank is there all year long, and they're doing stuff and trying to put their change in that bank, hoping that they'll have $30 by the time camp comes around. So, but that's good for them. That's kind of teaching them some responsibility.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Yeah.
So how does the person in the suburbs like kind of adopt this kid to, is it just an anonymous person?
No, what we do is, for example, we were at Dunwoody Baptist this past week. And we will, the pastor brings us up, we talk a little bit about Vision Atlanta, about sponsoring children, and then we have a big display in the lobby, and we'll have 100 pictures of kids there. And what you do is families come up, and they'll identify a little girl, and they'll take it, and they'll write a check or a donation, and they'll take that home, and we ask them to take it home and put it on the refrigerator, okay? And just be thinking about that child. And we invite and we let that child know at camp, on Fridays, it's card writing time. So all of the children have to write a thank you to the person that sponsored them. And so we get so many people telling us, man, we really loved that note that we got from our child that we sponsored, you know. And so then we say to them, well, that's great. Why don't you think about being part of our Stars of Grace and buying them a gift for Christmas? And why don't you come out? Bring your kids and just come out and hang out for a couple hours at the camp. And we have a lot of people do that. We have what we call snack time. A lot of our companies, they will come out and they'll bring juice and cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out and spend a couple hours. And, you know, we let the kids know that this company helped you get to camp. And they not only sent money, but look, they're here. And so they hug on them and love on them and give them juice and cookies. And we have, I don't know, how we had over 200, 300 people do that last year.
Well, you've obviously done a marvelous job of partnering with the private sector and helping you. And you have a golf tournament coming up soon, and there's an opportunity there for the private sector to get involved, yeah?
Yeah, one of our key fundraisers, Charity Golf Tournament, it's at the Manor this year in Alpharetta. And we have three levels of sponsor corporate sponsorships. We call it 20 kid, 10 kid, 5 kid. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what better way you can be a presenting sponsor, sponsor 20 kids. That gives you two foursomes. You come out, have a great day of golf, and we'll have about 20, 30 of our kids out there too.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And what's funny is we bring different kids every year, and we give them a first tee, gives them a golf lesson. So, and these kids are so funny. They, so far, I haven't found one kid that can hit a golf ball. it's crazy. But and it's so neat because we teach them etiquette, and then we take them out on the golf course. And it's so when they golf cart, and we say, now, when they hit, you have to be real quiet. And then after they hit, you have to applaud. And we go out, and some guys will shank a shot, and then the kids will clap for them. But yeah, you... If you can go to our website. We'll have that on there today. If you like to do a little golf or sponsor some children, so that's a key way for us to get kids to camp.
Oh yeah, well I'm definitely planning to come. So we'll get three or four guys together and have a high velocity radio foursome, or okay. Maybe I'll get four others. I don't even have any golf clubs, but I'll borrow some or drive the cart or something.
If you had a hunting, do you have any hunting events? Stone's
no.
A big hunter.
Lee accuses me of being a gun-toting redneck.
Oh, yeah.
No, that'll be fun, though. Absolutely. So what's the best way for folks to get in touch with you or your organization, learn more about what's happening, all these neat events coming up?
Yeah, we have a website, visionatlanta.org. Visionatlanta.org. Just go on there, and you should be able to find everything you need about what's going on in the ministry.
Okay, well, we'll get that link up on the High Velocity Radio website as well. And as you get any information about your upcoming tournament, we'll get that posted on our site as well. And we'll certainly help you get the word out. And I don't know if anybody's talked to any good PR people lately, but if
that would be good to, you know, that
I just
think,
man, I got to talk to Alex before I leave.
That's right.
Well, it would be, I was thinking it would be interesting way for the mentor to keep up with the kid is to have this kind of Twitter, social media kind of relationship where they can keep track of each other because kids are on their cell phone texting all the time.
Absolutely. On their cell phone, then there's, you know, these kids, even if they don't have computers in their house or the computers at school all day long, there are computers at the library.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Very cool. Hey, listen, before we let you go, Dave, we're going to put you on the same hot seat that we put Alex a little while ago.
Yeah.
But our listeners really do find this valuable, so we'd like to ask you to do it if you would. To share a mistake that you've made somewhere in your career and what you learned from it?
Well, I think I've never raised money. So when you start what I did, you have to raise a lot of money. We've raised $3.8 million in the last 5 years.
Incredible.
Four and a half years. And so when I started, I just was excited about the vision. So we're going to build phase one, right? And I shared that I would have lunches, I would have dinners, and I'd have all these people there. I'd say it's going to be X amount of dollars, and go ahead, now contribute. And people wouldn't contribute. And then I found, that's a mistake I made. I put a lot of energy and time into that. But I found the more specific I target, the easier it is to accomplish. And what I mean by that is the fort has 40 different units in it. And I was asking people to contribute to build this fort for the kids. But I didn't break it down specifically. So I broke it down into $25,000 bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And within about 8 months, it was done.
How
you know,
about that?
About 8 months, it was done. And I put the name of the company or the person that's going to that's actually going to sponsor that cabin, and it'll be hanging on the outside. And most people, you know, they like that because, and I like the kids to know that there are people that believe in you so much, they've just spent $25,000 for this cabin for you.
And I bet that means the world to them.
Yeah, yeah. And so, as a result of what I learned the hard way, spent a lot of time, we were able then to go ahead and get things funded. And the other thing I found is, you always raise money before the event, never during and never after. And that's another thing I learned. So, but those two things have helped me a lot.
Well, they're both valuable lessons, and I think they apply very much in any other arena as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking through marketing professional services or even product. The more you can compartmentalize and segmentize, is that a word, Alex?
Yeah.
It is now.
What a marvelous experience this has been having you on, Dave. And we are really behind you and excited for you. We're going to do everything we can to help you, man.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I hope you'll come back and give us a report maybe later in the summer.
Absolutely.
And I do want to get Lee on that zip line.
Okay. He's there.
Hey, fork over the cash, Stone.
Hey,
I'm there.
I really think it's worth it. If I can get you on the zip line.
Yeah, bring that video camera. That's a Yeah. A YouTube moment.
And we can get that on your blogs and your Twitter and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not so much, but yeah.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Lee Kanner, Alex Truto, and Dave Pridemore, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.